home, we are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Well, I'm holding the Pac-Man scratch-offs that we'll be giving away. I'll do the Waka, 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 Waka thing that I did with John Martin to embarrass myself this week. We're going to be at Fadley's on Friday from 2 until 5. I have received word that my friend, Thiru Vignaraja, who is running for mayor, will be joining us in the 3 o'clock hour. I think Leonard Raskin's coming by in the 4 o'clock hour because he feels bad for me because I'm not a real media member. We won't be able to cover the game on Friday and I'm under review and Luke's going to be at the draft. So I think Leonard wants to go to the baseball game with me. So I think Leonard might be stopping by Fadley's. We might have some other guests as well. I have a message out to Mayor Scott. Everybody that is running has been offered equal time. Some have taken advantage of it. I just want to make that clear as we do political things. Our friends from the Maryland Lottery are going to give me Pac-Mans to give away at Fadley's. I gave away a whole bunch of these as the Orioles scored runs, and Gunnar Henderson was Gunnar Henderson-ing at Greenmount Station on Wednesday. And then, like, I get in the car in the fifth, sixth inning, I think they're going to – and then there's three runs. Then there's four. Then there's five. Then they're, like, playing for their life. It was a little bit of a crazy afternoon. Luke, you and I are going to gather on Friday. We're going to talk about Liberty Pure Solutions and clean water and our friends at Jiffy Lube. I'm going to give away Pac-Mans. We're going to watch the A's come into town. I've done a whole bunch of radio. Jason Turbo, who wrote that great book on Charlie Finley, who lives in the Bay Area, came on. Great piece with him. We even talked about Kenny Loggins. That's how freaking good that piece was. Brad Baluchin joined me with a piece for you, Lucas, which is a little bit of Oakland A's, a little bit of wax packy type of stuff, and then this great WrestleMania thing about the Iron Sheik threatening to kill him and how he wrote a book about it. Awesome. I also had the great Susan Fornoff on, who created footsteps for people like you and me to walk upon. She covered the Orioles in the 1979, 80, and 81, and she was the Dave Kingman rat lady, and she is a Baltimorean whose father worked at the Domino Sugar Plant, which we now have open. Luke, how are you? You know, you watch a lot of baseball. You're up late. I was up late. I kind of fell asleep on the Monday game, and then Tuesday I stayed up, and it was a little wacky. Wednesday I watched the Greenmount Station. You know, I say garden variety 2 out of 3 series win in Anaheim, but it really kind of wasn't. It was a little dodge, and certainly Tuesday night, Rodriguez getting beaten up. You know, they come home, they're in great shape. The Yankees are coming in, but it was, you know, it was a mixed bag in Anaheim, man.
I mean, they won 2 out of 3. I mean,
right? I know
it wasn't perfect. I mean, but it never is in baseball. I mean, to me, it kind of was garden variety. I mean, I think what we're seeing about this team is kind of sort of we thought it was going to be. Now, individuals like Colton Cowser, like Jordan Westberg, are playing at levels that I think even the most optimistic of fans wouldn't have necessarily thought that kind of production from those guys this quickly in a season, especially coming off of, you know, in Cowser's case, struggling big time last year and Westberg being more pedestrian. But you said it, you know, as we were recapping opening day, you said it, they're going to hit the baseball, and they have, and they've hit it with authority, leading the league in home runs and scoring runs and even drawing some walks this series, as we saw some of that going on, Colton Cowser being one of those guys. But, you know, they took 2 out of 3. I think, you know, Grayson Rodriguez, his performance on Tuesday night aside, I think you're thrilled with what Albert Suarez did in his second start. I think you're perfectly fine with what Dean Kramer did. You know, he didn't pitch as deep into the game as you would have liked, but he struck out 10 guys. And sometimes when you strike out a bunch of guys, it's going to ride, you know, it's going to raise the pitch count a little bit. But the area that we talked about, that I talked about a lot, the area that I still think will need to be fortified between now and the trade deadline with an eye toward October, and not just getting there, but wanting to make a deep October run, is to strengthen the bullpen. And I think we're continuing to see the bullpen be choppy. Hasn't been a disaster, but you have games like Sunday, for example, or not Sunday, Wednesday, afternoon game, I'm thinking Sunday, but like Wednesday, for example, where you jump out to a lead, but then, you know, it does get a little hairy towards the end there. So, you know, I think I can't say I'm shocked by it. Craig Kimbrell's been excellent. I don't think there have been any concerns there. And as he continues to move his way up the career saves list, but, you know, even Yennier Cano, and not so much on Wednesday, but we've seen Danny Coulomb be a little shaky at times. So, you know, those are the main three guys going into the year. So, you know, beyond that, it's a lot of hit and miss. You know, guys will have a good outing, guys will have a good week or two, and then not so good. You know, like Keegan Aiken being a good example of that. So, you know, by and large, All of that being said, they're 16-8, coming home for a weekend series against Oakland, and then a big series with the Yankees to follow. So you're playing 667 ball. You're winning 2 out of 3 consistently. You know, I mean, I think the word is thrilled when it comes to this baseball team, even if we're acknowledging that, no, not everything is perfect. And again, there's no such thing as perfection in Major League Baseball.
You know, new homestand, new crab cakes down at Fadley's, little shrimp salad, the 25th anniversary documentary coming out. It will be out by the time we get there on Friday. I'm really hoping folks enjoy that. We've worked real hard on that, so I want to give a tip of the cap to Greg Landry, our friends at Blue Rock Productions, Towson Transfers. Certainly, I'm wearing my Curio Wellness shirt. They've been a great supporter of my 25th anniversary. Wendy Bronfine, her sister Rebecca, the whole Bronfine family, everything they've done at Far and Daughter, their 420 sale, and their point of sale issues last week aside, everybody's getting their discounts, taking care of things, but certainly getting the film out this weekend. We got draft. We're going to talk Bateman and signing and all that stuff, and we'll have draft picks to talk about, or at least maybe we won't have a pick on Friday. I don't know. We might not have a pick on Friday if Luke Jones's predictions that I've been hearing and reading all week. Do they bring up like a lottery pick prospect with every homestand? Is that part of, they're going to run out of it at some point? They only have so many 1-1s and 1-2s and 1-5s and because they only stunk for so long because they don't stink anymore. But they're doing something that, you know, there's been a lot of teams that have stunk. They stunk for a long time, and the old man wouldn't let them pick regular players. He fired general managers over it. But when you pick these guys, to your point, I mean, we can go through all the top 10 picks in the last 50 years of Major League Baseball draft. They're now getting these guys to the show with incredible regularity, even if they do start their career 1-for-30, and they all do, going back to Brooks Robinson in 1955. As John Eisenberg, who came on this week, by the way, Eisenberg released the Earl Weaver tapes and all that. We had the greatest Oriole. I haven't even platformed it, not even on YouTube yet. It'll be playing this week. I've got so much good stuff that we've talked about. But this team, we haven't. Heston's almost a Nestor. I know more Nestors than I know Hestons, and that includes Charlton. He was a pretty good one. Played God every Easter for me when I was a kid. But Heston cursed that. Here he is, right? So, you know, we've talked about all this and that, and guys coming up, and every conversation I had with baseball fans, and I had a dozen on the Greenmount stations, all like, Austin Hayes is done. It's over with for him. It's over with. And this is in 10 days, dude. The other kid, the second baseman, we're going to send it in back. Yeah, he can hit 067, whatever. The problems we talked about, you and me for 7 days down in Florida, driving around Sarasota, Fort Myers, just you and me in the car talking about what are they going to do with all these guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great problem to have, but it is still something you have to figure out. And as you mentioned, I mean, Heston Kerstad comes up, Austin Hayes on the IL because he hurt his calf in that Saturday night game in Kansas City. But as exciting as that is, and I understand he started on Tuesday night as Mountcastle was dealing with a little bit of a sore knee. They slide O'Hearn to first base. Santander goes to DH for the night. How much is he going to play? I mean, that's part of this because Colton Cowser's not sitting down at this point in time. I mean, he's hitting left-handed pitching at this point. He's starting against lefties. So until further notice, he's not just the good side of a platoon starter. He's an everyday starter. So
is there,
you know,
a weird platoon they could start to think about in the fifth or sixth inning, bring in, you know, two at bats and two at bat. I'm making that up because it never worked that way, but starters would go longer and righty lefty was more of a three at bat thing than a two at bat thing in your game, in the modern game of baseball.
Yeah, I mean, but that's what's challenging because how quickly do you make that move? And we've even seen Brandon Hyde encounter that some this year. He did last year as well when you have someone like O'Hearn who, you know, hasn't, in fairness to him, I'd almost like to see what he looks like against more lefties because of the progress he's made the,
well, Gunnar
the last
Henderson
couple
couldn't
years.
Hit lefties until he started homering off them the last 3 days.
Well, and exactly. Colton Cowser couldn't hit righty, lefty, ambidextrous, whatever it was last year. Now he hits everybody. So that's kind of what you run into here, but you know, it's an interesting, you know, it's a challenge. I mean, it is a challenge. And I think even with, you know, you see fans pick apart every single lineup and look, that it's makes for good banter, right? I mean, who's hitting where? Should Gunner be in the leadoff spot?
You and I
wiser
could do that
ESPN
all
again.
day and it feels like hot
Sure.
air, you know?
Well,
Like literally.
but that's baseball though. Like, baseball is set up to second guess and discuss and first guess and
Not
third
at
guess. And
Orioles.com or at Masson.com, but you know, anywhere
I
else,
just mean in
yes.
a general sense. I'm not trying to pick fights with any specific subset. It's just that's kind of how it works. But when you look at when you're Brandon Hyde and you look at this roster, and I mean, Earl Weaver famously wanted this, talked about it every year with Hank Peters. He wanted his best roster because he was going to use everybody. But you do run into the challenge of trying to. Because you're going to have to call on different guys at different times because of injuries, because of an ejection, because someone wakes up with the flu, whatever it is, that you don't want Mateo and Arias and guys like that to sit 10 days in a row. I'm not saying that they're going to start every other game or every third game. I mean, they're obviously not, but you still want to pick your spot. So that's where it is challenging. Even when you bring up someone like Heston Kerstad, who is killing it at Triple A. You still look at it and say, where's his path to playing? Because I think we saw on Tuesday night, even though Grayson Rodriguez, I mean, just struggled, got hit, knocked around big time. But I think we also saw why a lot of people think Heston Kerstad's best position is DH or maybe first base eventually in the major leagues because, he kicked the ball around a little bit. So when you have a player like that who is kind of sort of DH, that would be his optimal position, but you already are dealing with that with Mountcastle and O'Hearn every night against the right-handed starter. So you already have Santander who you want to use as a DH every now and then. So it's not easy. I mean, it really isn't.
I
That's
mean, how many
why,
at bats is the kid going to get in the next 10 days?
I mean, if we're just doing a pure trade-off, he replaced Austin Hayes, and I know they brought up the catcher for one day because he was on the taxi squad, but how many days or how many at bats was Austin Hayes getting every 10 days at this point in time? Since Calzer took over in left field, not much. So that's where I looked at Kerstad coming up. And look, I'm not second guessing the move, but I'm questioning how much is he really going to play? And once Hayes comes back, and they're not going to DFA Hayes, nor should they. But what do you do? Does he go back into that spot? He feels like the better fit as the reserve outfielder at this point in time because he's better defensively, swings right-handed. But at the same time, you do have Kerstad who has done nothing but hit at the Triple A level, and well, he's kind of stuck, and he's here now. But
And he's
you
also
still
a
look.
special talent. He's a super talent. He's not a third round pick
He
or a
is.
fifth round. He's a
Sure.
guy you've always, other than his illness, and we can talk about that, and he'll talk about that, I'm sure. But like other than that, derailing him in the same way that Tommy
Yeah.
John's about to derail Bradish or whatever, any of these guys to get injured or get sick, he's the real deal, right? I mean, he's put up numbers at Triple A, given his pedigree, that make you say, took him a year longer, maybe. But
Yeah.
fair enough, he's here, and took Ryan O'Hearn two organizations, right? Like, some of these guys get the light goes
Yeah.
on at different points.
No question, but you still run into the question of if you're asking me who the better fit is as a fourth outfielder who's not going to start regularly, Austin Hayes or Heston Kerstad, it's Austin Hayes because he's better defensively. He swings from the right side of the plate and he's got more speed. Now, I'm not saying that that's not an argument for him to start. That's the argument for who's the better fit as a bench role player. So that's why Ryan McKenna stuck around the last couple of years as long as he did, quite frankly, to the chagrin of many Orioles fans. But yeah, it's again, these are good problems to have. It's not a knock. It's where they are. And that's why, more people were questioning and wondering, might they pull off another trade in the offseason? And look, they can make a trade at any point, right? And they need pitching. You can never have too much pitching. I think that's evident. Regardless of what's going to happen with Means and Bradish here in the next couple of weeks,
You think
but
Kerstad's stealable?
yeah, he's dealable. Of course he is.
Okay.
I'm not saying now. I'm not saying that I want to trade him or that you need to trade him. But he's a consensus top 40 prospect in baseball. I mean, of course
Well, I'm
he's
gonna say you have
dealable.
to get something serious, man. You better get Corbin
Oh,
Burns back for him,
sure.
right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if there's a Corbin Burns deal to be made, but you're certainly getting something of real value. There's no question about that. Where, when you start
He
talking
would have
about,
been a Dylan
okay,
Cease guy, right? He would have been in that conversation, right?
yeah. I mean,
They want Holiday,
allegedly, I
right?
mean, Right, the story last year, I mean, which was never confirmed, but the conjecture was that they wanted Holiday, and the
Well, they
Orioles, of
wanted
course, laughed
something
at that.
Elias wasn't going to give them beyond, what he wound
Yeah,
up
I mean, that's
giving the Brewers.
right, and that's what's been so funny about this. And look, where does the line end in terms of what teams asking for the moon and Mike Elias also not wanting to part with good talent, because why would you? You want to try to hold on to it as much as you can. But that's where it is kind of interesting, because it's no secret around baseball that the Orioles are so flush. I mean, this embarrassment of riches that they have at AAA. I mean, through the whole system, but really at AAA right now, in terms of guys that are ready, quote unquote ready to sink or swim at the major league level. All the other teams know that. So they're all trying to say, well, you know what? We're not going to make this easy on the Orioles either. They want an established major league player. We know they have a lot of players that they could part with. So we're going to be picky too. So, you kind of get into this, game of chicken, so to speak. But in the meantime, like it is challenging, and it is, it's a great problem. It's, the epitome of what I guess the kids would say first world problems. But you bring up Heston Kjerstad, and just how many at bats are there for him, really? It's challenging. Like, even with my scenario earlier in the year when I was talking about Heston, or talking about Colton Cowser being a pseudo fourth outfielder that's going to rotate in with Hayes, Mullins, Santander, that was still working under the assumption that Colton Cowser wasn't going to look like an MVP candidate the way he has over the first month of the season, or certainly a rookie of the year favorite. So, it just forces your hand a little bit, and you look at your roster, and that's not to say that they're not going to fit Kjerstad into the lineup as much as they can and give him some opportunities and not have him sit too long. Although there certainly doesn't seem to be an expectation that Hayes is going to be out too long, but it's where it is at this point in time. I mean, you look at their starting nine on a nightly basis. Gunnar Henderson, he's playing every day. Jordan Westberg playing every day at third base now. Holiday is playing against right-handers, and got a hit on Wednesday, on Tuesday night, and that was good to see, and had some better at bats. So hopefully that's a sign of better to come. First base, O'Hearn or Mountcastle, and if it's a right-handed starter, the other one's DHing, and those guys have deserved that. So you look at this and say, how exactly do you work in someone like Kjerstad easily? So that's kind of where they are
You're
right
always
now, and
one
that's what.
pulled quad away from getting a couple of bats, though,
Oh,
right?
of course. Well,
And you're
and that's.
always quick to send him back when you brought him up. It's like, hey, dude, you might be here a couple of days. We got an injured player. Keep crushing it. Get up here. Take advantage. Hey, kid, take advantage of your opportunities.
Yeah.
I to your point, I don't know if he comes up and goes four for 10. Can they send him back? I don't know. I don't know with any of these young guys. And to your point, it feels like there's some showcasing going on at some point here, because if they all get together and are healthy, including Bradish and Means and, all the other darts that they have in the organization, including the Suarez guy that he's Venezuelan. I got to point that out again. I'm going to continue to point that out. It's my people. Venezuelans doing great things. This is the most fascinating baseball team, and I can't leave the house without everybody talking to me about it, right?
Yeah.
Whether I was at the bowling alley, I was at the bar, I was at Costas the other night. Everywhere I go, I don't post pictures everywhere I go, but quite frankly, this documentary thing's been tearing me up the last 10 days. So some nights I'm just like, I got to get my face off the screen and get out and get a drink. In addition to doing 160 hours of radio a week. Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke. He will be joining me at Fadley's on Friday. Try saying that five times real fast. The Oakland A's are in. I have great radio the next couple of days. I mean, just like awesome stuff that we're doing. Tharu Vigniraj is going to join us on Friday. Luke's going to be there from 2 until 3. I'm going to have the shrimp salad, and you're going to get some Pac-Man scratch-offs in the Maryland Lottery. It's a weird couple days, right? Because we have the draft Thursday. We only have one press credential, and only Luke is entitled to it. So we have two things going on Friday night, a game and the draft. Luke is going to be dedicated to the draft, but he is going to be down to pregame with the Orioles on Friday. We're going to have the text service like percolating, 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 pick. Orioles games, Yankees are in on Monday. Weather's going to get good this weekend. Documentary's out. I want to say that Thursday night. Please go watch the documentary. Please give me feedback. Make fun of me. Laugh, cry, do whatever you want to do. Say, oh, I didn't know that. I got to hit pause. Is that really Stacy Keibler? Is that her? looks like her. So it could be anything. It could be you. There's a lot of people that are going to show up in the documentary. Football. By the time some people hear this, they'll have a draft. We'll have a pick, or we won't, or they'll deal, or whatever. There was such anticipation from you and everybody else that is in the nerd circle of the offseason about fifth year and Bateman and OA. And take the floor on this, aside from the draft, because we'll have all fresh stuff to talk about Friday morning at Fadley's. We're going to have baseball games. Not going to play any baseball between now and Friday night, I don't think. But, the Bateman thing, they lie at the podium. I don't want to begin like going down that river, but they do. And whatever they say, but this is what they do. And what they do says that they like him maybe as much as they say they like him, even when 2 years ago, DaCosta said, I love my wide receivers, right? So this is how you love a player. You pay him, right? And say, I like you.
Yeah, but it's interesting. Not so much because they'd be looking to extend him, but the initial, obviously the team never announces what the actual money is. There's been conjecture, a couple, no reports out there that I'm comfortable with confirming at this point, but the early indications are this was not for a whole lot of money. And I just find that to be fascinating. Look,
he's not going to catch 90 balls in this offense, right? I mean, he's not going to go out into the market as that guy because this offense probably won't allow that for him, right? And it already has Flowers, right? So, to some degree?
Probably not. That's sure. But that said, the wide receiver market is exploding to such a degree, such a dramatic magnitude at this point in time that even if you put up 50 catches, even if you put up 700 yards, something along those lines, which, I don't think is out of the realm of possibility for Rashad Bateman, you're going to get paid, and you're going to get paid pretty handsomely on the open market, especially when people look at your skill set, the fact you're a former first round pick, you've got solid size, you've got good speed. The analytics say you're a really good route runner who separates really well. So, and again, as you and I are discussing this, on the eve before, on the eve of the draft and seeing how this is all going to shake out, the fifth year option was set to cost $14.3 million. I think everyone was in agreement that based on his body of work to this point, certainly not warranting that. But going back to what you just said and going back over all of the bullish comments made by John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta about the potential of Bateman in this offense, there's certainly some projecting going on here. There's certainly some idea of saying, you know what? His kids look really good at times. He's flashed at times. Go back and look at what he did the first three games of 2022 before he had the Liz Frank injury. I mean, he was putting up 100-yard games. It was only three games. I get it. It's a small sample, but he was showing explosiveness and big playability and all that. So if you're a team like the Ravens where they have never shown a willingness other than a one-year deal on Odell Beckham Jr., they have not shown a willingness in a very long time. I mean, you have to go back to the Anquan Boldin deal probably to pay anywhere in the neighborhood of near the top of market for a wide receiver, a free agent wide receiver. So
with all due respect to an old beaten up Steve Smith too, right? I mean, they signed a Hall of Famer. He wasn't top of market. Yes.
They did, but yeah, exactly. That was middle of the market, somewhere along those lines. So, but the idea is, if you feel there's meat on the bone for Bateman that hasn't been realized yet, and there's potential that hasn't been realized yet, and you feel that he's healthy, he played all but one game last year. There is a school of thought to say, you know what, it might be a slight overpay, or it might be a little bit longer of a commitment than we would look at it through a vacuum. But if you have some cost here and some projection here that you think this could end up being a bargain in a year or two, then why not explore a contract extension? But again, if this was truly if this ends up being as affordable as it was, it's one of those where I honestly question it from the player's perspective and say, okay, Rashad, you didn't put up big numbers last year, but Beckham's going to be out of the picture this year. They're probably going to draft a receiver at some point, but if, whether it's first round, second round, third round, fourth round, who knows if they're going to be, they have Zay Flowers and Mark Andrews and Isaiah likely to contest with in terms of for targets. there's certainly good potential for Bateman to have at least a step forward, at least a decent step forward. And if that's the case, then you kind of wonder why would you sign such a small contract extension? So it's great for the team. There's little to no risk here if, in fact, the numbers that are potentially out there are end up being anywhere close to that, which some people have thrown out there that it's $15 million for a couple years tacked on, which would not be very much. I mean, that sounds like a lot maybe to people who are thinking in terms of 10, 15 years ago, but it's not for a wide receiver anymore. So I just found it interesting because, to your point, you mentioned the liar's luncheon, you mentioned truths, half truths, and darn lies, like all of the things that a team will say in the offseason. But they were very bullish talking about Beck or talking about Bateman and what he can do and what they're counting on him doing this coming year. So I think a big part of that is he's got to stay healthy in the spring and the summer. Got to get on the practice field and on the same page with Lamar Jackson. Because how many times did we see big play potential and Lamar Jackson overthrows it, or there's a miscommunication, or Bateman drops one? There were all sorts of plays. Felt like it happened every week for a while there, where you would see those two looking like, wow, that's six, or wow, that's a 40-yard gain. And it was just off. So you're hoping that on-field chemistry can improve with Bateman being healthy and on the field, Lamar being there for the entire spring and summer, no contract issues with him. We'll see how it plays out, but was certainly an interesting, not as dramatic as the contract extension signed at the draft last year, but certainly surprising to see this because, if you had asked anyone on Twitter, Ravens fans on Twitter, I mean, if there was more likely that Bateman was going to get traded or extended, right, at the draft, more people probably would have said traded. So was interesting to see how
traded
this
for
plays
what?
out. But again,
Traded for what?
well, I mean, there's all kinds of different ways. I mean, there's ways you can pick swap. You could trade a player for another player, at another position of need,
What is he going to
whatever
get
it might
traded
be. And
for the 73rd pick in the draft? Is that what, like literally, is that what it would like look like to you?
I mean, I don't know if it would have been quite that much, but again,
Right. I mean,
some of that also
I'm
depends
thinking
on.
that's even speculative, right? So, like, we talk
Yeah.
about the value of these
Because
guys and certainly their salaries and where they are. It's the same thing with Austin Hayes. Makes a little bit of money. Certain teams would say, I got a cheaper. I'll have hamburger instead of steak. You know what I mean? And there is some
Yeah.
point
But at.
of that.
But there, but th that said, you're talking about someone who's a first round pick. You're talking about someone who everyone knows has played in an offense first with Greg Roman. And even, we'll see how it plays out with Todd Monk in year two, but certainly not an offense where, other than the number one wide receiver, Zay Flowers, sure, he gets his targets. Hollywood Brown got his targets. Other than the number one wide receiver, because we know Lamar loves to throw to the tight ends, and understandably so, because they're really good. Yeah, you're not going to get the volume for lucrative production. So you might have a team that would say, okay, we're not going to give you a second round pick, but maybe we'd get you a third as long as you kick in a fifth with him. Something along those lines. I mean, could that have been possible? Sure. But again, they end up extending him instead, and now he's under contract through 2026. And again,
And
we'll
they
see
can
what the
say at
terms look
press
like.
conferences, unlike what they can say guard right now, which is we have a solution. We have, you know, we have two first round draft picks. They're
At
all
least
wide
part of one.
receivers.
Yeah, at least part of one. I mean,
Oh, and we have
he's
Nelson
not.
Aguilar. We have another guy.
Sure,
Yeah.
sure. Now, I don't think, let me be clear, I don't think this move disqualifies them from taking a wide receiver. And I was always skeptical about first round. I don't think it disqualifies them from the possibility of adding another wide receiver in the third round, something along those lines. I wouldn't say that at all. But it does add a little stability because keep in mind, prior to this extension being announced, Zay Flowers was the only wide receiver on the roster under contract beyond 2024. So it adds some stability. Again, we'll see what happens. Even if Bateman doesn't really improve that much, statistically speaking, you still look at what the market dictates. It probably will end up still being a deal that's fine. So
Well, and you also
if.
look at it and say, what could you get in the draft that's going to be better than him when they haven't been very good at it to begin with? And
Sure.
if he's good enough, to your point, to catch 40, 60 balls in this offense and be a target and some weeks be a factor, to your point, he was a factor 2 years ago in the beginning of the year. If he can be a factor in what they're doing,
it's
he
fine.
doesn't need to be the factor. He's not expected to be that. And the bloom on his first round draft pick, you've already, you know, pissed that away, saying he's maybe a third, maybe a fourth. I mean, he's not that guy, and he's probably not perceived to be that guy. And I do wonder, you know, the Cardinals ponied up for Hollywood Brown and believing he was something. And, you know, other than injury, that he kind of sort of was what they thought he was going to be, even though they haven't been great. Yeah, I'm wondering what the other team would value and say he's worth a third. We believe we can do better with him than we could taking a fresh player.
Yeah. Well, and part of it also is this wide, this draft is regarded as being quite deep at the wide receiver position. So how much of a market was even going to be there, present itself in that regard too. So, you know, again, pending what the actual numbers are and when the deal was officially signed and filed to the NFLPA, you know, it'll come out. But
it wasn't desperation by Eric DaCosta.
No, it sounded right. Like an opportunity more than anything else. Again, you know, if they were giving him let's put it this way, and this will be my final thought on it. If they were giving him, you know, the $14 million, $14.3 million was the 5th-year option. If they signed him to a 2-year, $30 million contract, you'd be scratching your head and saying, why? You know, what has he done to warrant that? So it's clearly less than that. It's much less than that. So from that standpoint, if you project and you still think there's some meat on the bone for this guy to get better, if he stays healthy, if nothing else, then I'm good with it. You know, he was already going to be on the team this year, so it doesn't change your Super Bowl chances, but or your trajectory, but it's nice to have a little more stability at that position, because you certainly don't want to be in a spot like they were a couple years ago when they lost Rashad Bateman, and then you saw what they had left after they had traded Marquise Brown. So they have Zay Flowers, they have Rashad Bateman. As you pointed out, they have Aguilar. Is it the best wide receiver group in the league? Far from it. Far from it. But they've had way worse there. And like I said, I still would not be surprised at some point, first half, you know, first four rounds of the draft, wouldn't be surprised to see them still come away with another receiver to add to the mix.
Yeah, we talked about how deep their wide receiver room was because we believed in Bateman last year and we believed in Beckham last year and we thought Flowers could be pretty good. He was better than either one of them, and either one of them were great. And all the bluster about it's a great room. Keep in mind, as draft weekend unfolds here this weekend, everybody's got their report cards, and this team has improved itself by this much, and the Browns are going to be great again, and their quarterback, who's a mystery, is just going to be awesome. And stop. You know what I mean? Like,
everyone loves their team this time of year, other than the Cowboys.
Beckham
baby,
will go on the all-time, you know, look good getting off the bus team, you know, with his beats on his head and, you know, tall statue. Like, yeah, he looked good getting off the bus. I saw the numbers. I saw the production. It's real. It's there. And it was all about not a lot, really, in the end. A lot of money for him, but not all, you know, it wasn't all that.
As we said, that ended up more, as much as anything else, whether you agreed with it or not, as much as anything else, that ended up being a Lamar tax. I mean, it felt like it at the time, and I think it still proved out to be that way. That felt like, at least in part, an olive branch to try to get the ball rolling with Lamar Jackson. And hey, they got a deal done a few weeks later, and he signed, and he just won his second MVP in 5 years. So from that, through that lens, it was fine, even though, yes, from a production standpoint, he was not a $15 million receiver. I think anyone would recognize that.
He's Luke Jones. He's Baltimore Luke. He will be at Fadley's with me. We will be giving away Pac-Man scratch-offs in the Maryland Lottery. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions keeping our water clean. And Jiffy Lube keeping us lubricated and oiled up, right? Clean filters, all that good stuff at Jiffy Lube MultiCare. We are going to be at Fadley's on Friday. The documentary comes out Thursday. I have no idea what the future holds around here. I'm going to have crab cake tours throughout May. I haven't figured it all out yet because I've been just too damn busy, because we have a great radio here, too. All of our guests this week leading up to this Oakland weekend. Maury Brown came on, John Eisenberg. There's so much going on. David Richardson hosted me at Greenmount Bowl on Wednesday, and we did 2 hours on the past, present, and future of Maryland racing. And I've spent a lot of time talking Maryland racing here over 32 years. Was one of the more fascinating conversations that I've had. So I went there, tune up, tune in, fall in. Watch the documentary. Go to BaltimorePositive.com. It's going to be great stuff coming your way over the weekend, because I'm just sort of backloaded with So much great radio this week. So, and big appreciation, everybody, in anticipation of the documentary. I've had a lot of kind words, people saying nice things. I've been sharing a whole bunch of pictures. Even Luke's anticipating his role in this presentation. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. A lot of football, a lot of text coming your way if you're on the WNST tech service. And certainly, baseball has been very, very good to me all weekend long. And the New York Yankees coming to town on Monday. It's going to be 80 degrees. Hallelujah. We got a contender in Baltimore. Stay with us.